by the waters of Babylon, we lay down and wept for thee, Zion. We remember thee, Zion. It was the hottest day, hottest hour of a very hot day. The heat rising in waves off the sand, bending the blazing light so that earth and sky became one. Abraham dared not venture outside, though his tent was pitched in the shade of a great terebinth tree. He was still recovering from his circumcision and made comfortable by lying inside his tent or sitting quietly at its entrance. He hardly moved. It had taken him 2 days to circumcise all the men in his camp. Ishmael went first, submitting bravely to the flint knife, and the others could scarcely object once the boy had gone ahead of them. Abraham made the cuts quickly and cleanly, and then gave each of them a compress of crushed herbs to guard against infection and quell the pain. A few days later, the camp was still quiet, the men keeping to their tents and the women ambling out to the well to draw water or gossip about how their husbands were healing. The only noise came from the animal pens where the unmilked goats bleated plaintively at the sheep who stood like stone statues in the heat. It pleased Abraham to contemplate the son that Sarah would bear. He had told her about the covenant of circumcision, of course, but not about Isaac. He hadn't yet found the words to convey what he had heard, but still couldn't understand that God would give them a son. What? Abraham had fallen on his face laughing at the idea. To me, an old man of 100 and a woman who is 90, a child? Yes, to you, a son of laughter, Isaac, said the Holy One. Isaac, which means he laughs. And the Lord appeared to Abraham by the terebinths of Mamre. He had closed his eyes against the glare of the sun as a light breeze caressed his face. Something stirred him from his reverie, and Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. He hadn't seen them approach, and he couldn't tell from what direction or by what means they had journeyed. The sun was at their backs, but they cast no shadows in the blank sand. He didn't recognize the strangers, yet Abraham knew them to be fellow travelers, sojourners like himself in this arid and foreign land. As he ran to meet them, Abraham noticed that the pain had altogether vanished from his loins. As soon as he saw them, he ran from the door of his tent to meet them, bowing to the ground. He said, "My lords, if it pleases you, do not go past your servant. Let a little water be brought. Bathe your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And let me fetch a morsel of bread that it may comfort your hearts. After that, you may pass on, seeing that you have come your servant's way." And they replied, "Do as you have said." He led them to the base of the tree and made them sit among its wide roots and brought them water. Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "three measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes." Then Abraham ran to the herd, fetched a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant boy, who hastened to prepare it. And he took butter and milk and gave it and of the calf which he had prepared and set it before them. Abraham did not eat with his guests, but remained standing while they ate, hovering over them and tending to their needs. One of them said to them, "Where is your wife, Sarah?" "There, in the tent," said Abraham, wondering how the visitors came to know her new name. since he had yet to announce it to his own tribe. Then one said, I will return to you at this season next year, and your wife, Sarah, shall have a son. Sarah was listening inside the tent door, which was behind him. Now remember, Abraham and Sarah were old and well advanced in years, and Sarah had ceased having the period of women. Therefore, she laughed to herself at the stranger's news. Me? Us? Again? Now? Shall we have pleasure and a son by the waters of Babylon? We lay down and wept for thee, Zion. We remember Zion. The story of Abraham and Sarah's vision is created in the context of exile. The best and the brightest people of Israel had been taken by force, marched into Babylon, 500 miles from Jerusalem as the crow flies, 900 miles on foot. In a matter of months, they've lost just about everything: their city, their country, their schools and jobs, their libraries, their homes, their place of worship. And in that time, in the 6th century before Jesus was born, their frame of understanding told them their Holy One was rooted in a place, and that the God of Israel could not stray beyond that border. So, when they lost their temple and country, perhaps their most painful grief was existential, they also lost God. What difference does the God of Israel make, they cried, if you are a stranger in a strange land, hundreds of miles from home? By the waters of Babylon, they laid down and wept. But what if borders are our arbitrary? What if God is portable? No building to pray in, no place to call my home, cut off from country and kin. No wonder the troubadours and the poets gathered the people around campfires and watering holes and conjured stories of identity. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, light and dark, weal and woe, and none of it was easy, but all of it was good. In the beginning, God created water and dry land, male and female, life and death, and none of it was easy, but all of it was good. In the beginning, God created siblings and rivalry, family and tribe, neighbors and strangers, and none of it was easy, but all of it was good. Grounded in their devastating reality, listen to the psalm again that we just read. The psalms were written in that exile, when they'd lost everything. The songs of a people finding their way where there seemed to be no way. Listen, I love the Lord because he has heard my voice of supplication. What? God hears my voice crying in the wilderness? God hears me, they sing. Hear now me, us. How? Look at the text. I will fulfill my vows to the Lord in the presence of the people, not in a temple, not in a building, in the presence of the people. We can find grace on a difficult road. We can hold ourselves accountable. We can raise each other up. You see, the presence of God, they discover in that moment of utter loss, the presence of God is in their midst. It's in the people. It's not where they thought it was. And they didn't know that until they'd lost everything and discovered God is still here in my desolation. God is in the midst of the people, the poet tells us. At work, at prayer, in the fields, when we dance, when we eat, when we take care of those in need, and especially, the poet says, when we welcome the stranger. And we know what it is to be a stranger in a strange land, they said to themselves. And don't we? in a city in ruins, like a field of dry bones. And if we close our eyes and hold on to somebody's hand, maybe we can imagine a baby being born to very old parents, even us. Can we let ourselves dream that God's not done with us? That new life is always coming. When? Right when we're convinced there's nothing left. We're empty, barren, done, tired. And God says, there's more. There's always more. Abraham and Sarah represent anyone who's living with their back against the wall. And in a still, small voice, God says, in that desolate place, I love you. And there's more. Where is Sarah, your wife? The messenger says. Well, she's hiding behind the door. Well, she's gonna have a son. What? After all these years and tears? No wonder they laugh. And it must have felt so good to laugh for a change. And look at this. In the context of their struggle, Abraham and Sarah are invited out of their pain. How? By extending kindness to strangers. Hospitality heals, the story suggests, in both directions. Not just for the guests, but for the hosts. Columnist and creator of The Conversation Project, Ellen Goodman, writes that in our overscheduled, overcommitted lives, the currency in shortest supply and greatest demand is one called time. And time is essential to hospitality. You can't entertain angels unaware if you never stop to listen to the one knocking at your door or squeegeeing your windshield or revving up his motorcycle engine or kneeling on her prayer rug or whispering inside you. Time. It's the indispensable ingredient of all intimate relationships. It's the bedrock of every one-on-one conversation. And yet many of us are always working or seeking leisure or on the phone or all the above. And we can't seem to find the time to make others feel wanted and welcome, to share with them ourselves, our homes, and our companionship. No wonder we're so lonely. No wonder the number one cause of death for young people is related to despair. Yet sharing time and extending hospitality to friends and visitors it's highly therapeutic. It's an activity of healing for each of us. It answers a fundamental human need for nurture and communion and rest. Seeking the welfare of the city, of our city, of each other and our partners, heals us. Loving you and loving myself is loving the Holy One. They're one. Abraham and Sarah embody a how-to manual for this kind of care in the wilderness. And we know something about needing to heal in that kind of landscape too, don't we? Life is hard enough, it says, and you don't know what the people you encounter are struggling with. So, be swift to love and make haste to be kind. Look, despite his weakened condition, the old man is made young again through his kindness, falling all over himself in his haste to extend every comfort to these three strangers who've wandered in out of the desert. Wiping his tears, he runs to greet them, offering shade and water, hurrying to ask Sarah to make cakes, sprinting to fetch a calf, and urging the servant boy to hasten to prepare it. I'm tired just thinking about it. And nothing in the text suggests that Abraham recognizes the three strangers as angels. He's just doing the right thing by them. So maybe it's the act of hospitality that makes their encounter holy. Try it. We draw closest to God, not by sequestering ourselves on a mountaintop or praying alone in ourselves, but by tending to the everyday needs of others and ourselves face to face in the most ordinary settings. By the waters of Babylon, wherever they may find you, what if we help each other rise up, dry each other's tears, and laugh about the new life that just might be coming our way? Amen.